I've decided to record at home the lessons that I'm going to be doing three times a week and other information. I stopped recording when we had the COVID. I couldn't figure out how to record the meetings and do it through my phone or computer. I hope everyone's being safe. It's a tough time. We have the Zoom meetings. If you go to the site experiencethebigbook.org and look at the cover page, you'll see under Thoughts, Zoom meetings online. We'd love to have you join us. It's been fun. We've met people from all over the world and all over the states, and you're certainly welcome. It would be great. First paragraph in page 84 tells us how to live in the world of the spirit. And he talks about in step three, we've made a decision to turn our lives over to the will of God. And he says that's as perfectly as we can do it. I can make a decision to turn my life over to the will of God, and that's all I can really do. But I have to be able to allow God to do it. And he says, God will take care of my growth. All I have to do is remove the things that block us from God. And that's from page 64. It says, the step three is a vital and crucial step, but will have no permanent effect unless followed at once by an effort to face and remove the things blocking me from God. It says, remember, liquor is just a symptom of the spiritual malady. And the only way to do that is through steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I believe according to the big book. You'll let me know. It's just, I'm going to enjoy doing this. I'm going to do one almost every day or every other day. It says we grow, we face and remove the things in 4 through 9. It says the spirit will then grow. And if the spirit grows, the mind will grow. And remember, we're poor and we have a spiritual illness. And the only way we're going to allow the spiritual to grow is to allow it. If we block it, it won't grow. And if the spirit grows, the mind will grow. And I wrote, the mind will grow towards truth. I will be able to see the truth of situations instead of living on a lie. And when the mind grows, my relationships with other people and the rest of the physical world will grow too. And it says on page, 77, we're putting our lives in order. This is not an end in itself. How do I put my life in order? I put in order with God in steps 1 through 3. And the mind, I put in order to the truth in 4, 5, 6, and 7. And 8, 9, I put my life in order with the world and other people. That's how I lose my fear of other people. And I'm not in conflict with everybody and everyone. And the rest of the physical world will grow too. The growth is unending. There's no limit. Remember, we're down a path. There's no end to our spiritual growth. And step 10 is the beginning of this growth in our lives. We've gotten ready to play the game in 4 through 9. And step 10 is, how well do I play the game every day? And step 10 is the way to enter a plan of continuous growth. And on page 84 in that practice, in that paragraph, you notice they use the word continuous several times. We have to continue, but if we continue, we have to start somewhere, and we start with the decision in step 3 and the actions of 4 through 9. We don't get perfect through 4 through 9. We just get well enough to play the game every day to grow. If you haven't done 4 through 9, and it doesn't take long, step 9 may take forever, but 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and beginning step 9 doesn't take very long, then you've entered the world of the Spirit. That's what it says on page 84. And it says we can't remain at a certain point. Either we're growing or deteriorating. And that's what you see all the time in AA, people doing real well, and the next thing you know, they're gone. They've deteriorated. And remember, the ego is never satisfied and always waiting. It's patient. Alcoholic's patient. Alcohol is patient. It waits. You might look at a stone building and think it is not changing, but it's actually deteriorating. That's why we practice these steps, these principles on a daily continuous basis, or we deteriorate. And if I stop doing steps 10 and 11 every day and I start living in self, how long will I go before there's a certain time when I say, well, drink sounds pretty good. You don't know. You don't want to take that chance. And besides, if you don't do step 10 every day and do it well in 11, your quality of life's going to deteriorate. It says a good healthy step 10 is always based on how well we have understood steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. In other words, if I've started to do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I'm in better spiritual health than I was before I started. So I'm stronger. And it says we find that some people cannot work step 10 because they haven't done the other steps effectively and thoroughly. I see a lot of new people. We have a treatment center 40 or 50 miles away, and we get a lot of people go to treatment there, and there's one in town. And I'm not saying they're good or bad, but they don't study the book. They don't do the steps out of the book, and I don't know what their program is. I don't have an opinion. But when people say, well, I've done my step four, then I ask, well, what did you learn in step four? And did you learn how to be free of anger? Did you learn how to be free of fear? Did you write out a sane sex ideal? Do you have a list of people you've harmed? What's the exact nature of your defects? What are your character defects? How are you going to change them? And then they just stare at me. And I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm just saying, well, maybe we want to follow what's in the book. Because if I want what they have, I'll do what they did. And the most important thing is it's work for me. And it's the only thing I can do to help someone. I can only show them what I've done and how it's helped me. And I hope doing these podcasts has helped somebody to see what they need to do, and they've done it, and then they're sharing it with someone else. So the tools for living are built into step 10. So if you can't do them, you can't work the steps. Step 10. Remember, we're picking up a kit of spiritual tools. Now, if we want to use the tools, we have to have them. We have to pick it up, and 4 through 9 is really getting the tools ready to plug in every day to God so that we can live in harmony with Him, ourselves, and the world. I think the inventory is the basis of our preparation, he says. In the inventory, we said that things emanate from the inside out. That was really our character defects, which caused the resentments. But we analyze them from outside in. Remember, we start with the resentment, and then what we think they did, and then how we were threatened, and then say the prayers. He's going to talk about that. We look at resentments first. We look at the outside. And then we looked at what they had done, and then we traced that over to see what part of self was threatened. Now, that's an important word, threatened. People don't realize threatened means you're afraid. So I always perceive a threat to start the ball rolling with anger. It's always I perceive a threat to what I think I want or need, or my pride or my self-esteem or my material instincts or my sex instincts. It's me. I'm threatened. Why? Because I'm in self. Now, we talk about if you're with God in the now, you can't be threatened. Nothing anybody can do to you is going to threaten you with God. So if you're threatened, it means you're separated from God. And if that doesn't work for you, you might want to work the steps 3 through 9 and start doing step 10 every day. I have new people read step 10. Listen to the podcast. They're still starting their 3 through 9, but they have to understand what they're going to be using, how they're going to use this in their daily life to want to do it. So when we see what was threatened, we trace that to find out the exact nature of my wrongs or character defects. Having done it that way, when we come to step 10, each day throughout the day and throughout our lives, we use these tools when a resentment comes up. Every minute, if I have a resentment, I'm bothered by something, I know there's something wrong with me, I'm disturbed because some part of me is threatened. And it's usually I'm back into false pride or low self-esteem. And I'm judging, or I'm intolerant, or I'm impatient. How can they do this to Michael the Magnificent? I mean, how can they treat me this way? And it's so ridiculous. And I don't want to be that way. So I have to change. And I use these tools to forgive, to let go, to change, to grow, to practice God's character and not mine. And it's very useful when they come up, because then you can grow by facing them quickly and changing the way you see things. Most of our discomfort, and the only way I can really get disturbed and have a bad day is if I do it. I mean, it's that simple. Who wouldn't want to do this? Most of our discomforts are caused by one of our grosser handicaps. That's what it says in the book. And our grosser handicaps are resentment, fears, and guilt or remorse for something we have or have not done in the past. And remember, we look at the grosser handicaps and work back to the inner defects that caused it. And the character defects are all triggered by self-centered fear. We're threatened in some way. Self-centered fear. Fear somebody's going to do something to me. Somebody's not treating me right. I'm not going to get what I want. It triggers all my character defects. And then I'm angry and I'm fearful and I harm people. I take actions based on self. It's caused me to be harmed and harm other people. And here's the thing. I don't want to allow my grosser handicaps to dominate my life anymore. Somebody talked yesterday about how they fear and they couldn't stop the fear and they were worried somebody was taking something from them, blah, 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 blah. What I do when I get fear now is I just sit there and I say, well, it's not real. It's not happening right this moment. It's a false belief. It's not true. And I say, I don't want to waste any more time on fear anymore in my life. I'm going to be in the now with God. God removed my fear, direct attention to what I should be. And he says, be in the now. Be with me. Do what you need to do. Follow my will. Be grateful for what you have. So he says, most of our uncomfortable feelings, that's what people like to talk about at meetings, fit under one of these categories, either resentment, fear, or shame and guilt. A lot of times we call our uncomfortable feelings something else, but really, that's what they're usually based on, our character defects. Remember, I'm a self-centered person. And the right-hand side is the characteristics of God-centered person. And you can quickly see if you're on the left-hand side, you're always going to be uncomfortable. And you're separated from God. And the point of step 10 is to live on the right-hand side and not practice the left-hand side. It says we don't pay attention to the first two columns when we're threatened, when we have uncomfortable feelings. We ask, what part of me has been threatened? Now, I don't have to talk it over with somebody. And that's why I tell my sponsees to carry a little card and write down whenever they're afraid or angry. And then call me and go over with it. Now, very few actually ever do it. They wait. They wait a few days, or they get upset and they don't call me and they drink. And I can't emphasize how important that is. You might want to get an index card. And just every time you're disturbed, just write the name or the situation, what happened, any kind of fear. Just write it down. And then go over it with someone in the evening. And that's how you practice 4 through 9. And then make amends if you haven't done so once you figure out how you harm somebody. The key thing here, as in any illness, is early detection. Well, I'm a retired cancer and oncologist, hematologist, early detection is the key. I mean, if you want to have success against cancer, you have to detect it early before it's spread. If you haven't and it's spread, it's too late. And step 10 tells me to defect these things early, the things that are blocking me from God. In the big book, it says on page 84 in that paragraph, we watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear. When these crop up, I ask God to remove them immediately. And I watch with God because I'm in conscious contact with God. And God will help me watch, and then I ask him to remove it right away when it crops up. I don't let it become a full harvest. I don't want my resentment to grow into a big stalk of wheat Once we see the first leaf coming out of the ground, I want to snuff it out. A lot of times they are like some of what we wrote down in step four, and identifying them is sometimes enough because they look stupid and they just go away. That's why it's important to do a written inventory, because you can see it. And if you have fear and you're disturbed by people during the day, you can do a quick written inventory in the beginning so that you can go over that with someone that day, and that's how you learn to practice it. And it also helps the person you're going over with. It helps me, because we all have the same crap. None of us are spiritually perfect. Remember, when an alcoholic wakes up, he's with his mind. He's in dangerous territory. And so we have to watch for what our minds are thinking all the time. A lot of times, they're like we wrote down in step four, I said that. When we catch ourselves back in those patterns again, we can often analyze them in our minds and deal with them because we've learned to do it in step four. Now, I'm not perfect, but I recognize it right away. I try to deal with it right away. There's certain people in AA that annoy me. I know that's surprising, but I really believe they're annoying people. And of course, I may be annoying, but they're annoying. But I don't want to let me think they're annoying disturb me. They just are who they are. So I say, I love them. That's their personality. So going from annoying to accepting. So then I'll see them and I'll start to get annoyed. They say the same thing. They do whatever was started to annoy me. I say, well, no, that's wrong. They are who they are. That's the way it is. They're happy. They need to do what they're doing for them. Be loving and tolerant. And this is how you practice love and tolerance, because remember, that's our code of living, it says on page 84. I want to be loving and tolerant. Now, tolerant, we talk about a lot. The way I look at tolerance, it's an engineering term for how much a substance can tolerate before it decomposes. That might not be exactly the definition, but it's similar. So I want to build a barrier between someone that I thought was annoying and getting annoyed, so that the barrier, I stop, and the barrier stops me, and I say, they're a child of God, this is who they are, and I don't get disturbed. So the more I build the tolerance, the stronger my tolerance, the less disturbed I am. And the tolerance is only built by God, prayer and meditation. And so I want to have this high level of tolerance between me and whoever is going to disturb me. And it really works. But I ask for it in the morning. It says in the morning we pray and ask for love, the way God show me the way of love, patience, and tolerance and kindness. And that's on page, I believe, 77 or 78. And we can analyze and deal with them because we've learned it in step four. We practice with God's tools. And it says we are promised in the book, big book, a new freedom. What's the new freedom? The old freedom was that I was free to live in self and have the consequences of it. Now I'm free I'm not in bondage to that old way of thinking and living. Scripture talks about all that. We've been born again. We live in the spirit, not in the flesh. And the freedom I have now is for me and my thinking and my self-centered thinking and my ego. And we have to do a lot of work for this new freedom. It's true. You just don't get it by asking for it or wishing for it. You have to do the action. That's why it's how it works it into action. And so, and it can be protected. How do I protect my new freedom? I protect it with God, staying in conscious contact with God, prayer and meditation, inventorying whenever I start to lose my new freedom so that I keep it protected. This is what people call staying on the beam. How do I stay on the beam? As soon as I feel a resentment and say, and this is great, he says, it's so-and-so's fault, I realize I'm giving up my new freedom. I'm going to say that again. Whenever I have a resentment and say, it's so-and-so's fault, I realize I'm giving up my new freedom. They become my higher power. They dominate my mind. They replace God. I'm turning the reins of my life back over to someone else. And it's so silly because that person you're turning your life over to may not be very spiritually well. And every time I get angry or afraid, I lose my freedom. The secret, and here's the secret, is that it is, if it's my fault, I have a chance to be free. I always say, I hope it's my fault. And it's always my fault. I'm being inconsiderate or judgmental, and I'm not being tolerant. They are who they are. And I have a mantra that I practice with my sponsees, LPTKCC. I'll say, how's your ex-wife? He goes, she is who she is, LPTKCC. I'll say, somebody ask me, how's Patty? Patty's Patty, LPTKCC. It takes you out. They are who they are. And if I practice love, patience, tolerance, kindness, considerate, and compassion, I'll get it back. If I practice intolerance, I get intolerance back. So I always hope it's my fault. That's great stuff. If, as soon as I get angry at someone, I'm giving up my freedom. I don't want it to be their fault. I want it to be my fault. It's so easy to go back to the old pattern of saying, they did this or that to me. But if we do, we will either go back to our old way of living or at least we'll be miserable. Now, the one way you get free of that is on page 66, it says we had to be free of anger. And it says we had to master our resentments. But how? How do I master it when I get this angry? How do I build that tolerance? Well, it's very simple. They say this was our course. We realized that when someone did something that we didn't like, that perhaps they were spiritually ill, and here's the key word, like me. I'm spiritually ill when I'm judging them. And it says, then I ask God for four things. Give me love, patience, and tolerance for this person as I would for a sick friend. So I want to change the way I see them. The second prayer is, God, how can I be helpful to them? And the third one is, God, save me from being angry at them. I don't pray for them. They talk about that a lot at meetings. It's in the Freedom from Bondage chapter. It may be great. But I can't pray for them until I'm not angry at them. If I'm angry at them and I pray for them, my prayers are going to reflect it. I have to say, God, save me from my anger. I'm saving myself, and I have to have God do it. And then the fourth prayer is, how can I have a kind and tolerant view of them? So those four prayers you say right away. I see somebody is annoying. I say he may be spiritually ill just like me. I'm spiritually ill because I'm annoyed. God, give me love, patience, and tolerance for this person. How can I be helpful to them? Well, listen to them and be nice. God, save me from being angry. Help me forgive them. Put me in a position of neutrality. And give me a kind and tolerant view for them. And I could do that in 10 seconds, and then they've changed. Now, you know what? They really haven't changed, but I've changed the way I see them. And so I have a new freedom. And they can be the way they are. It's fine. People are who they are. I am sure I annoy people. People have to say the prayers about me all the time, I'm sure. But I hope not too much. But none of us are perfect. It's so easy to go back to the old pattern of saying, they did this or that to me. But if we do, we either go back to our old way of living or at least we'll be miserable. Once I talk about what they did this or that to me, then I'm back in self, I'm separated with God, and I'll be miserable. Why? Because they're my higher power now. The key thing is to detect discomfort early, analyze it right away, and work your way right out of it with God and another human being. So this is the key. If I say someone did this or that to me, then I'm in my old way of living, I'm in the bondage of self, and I won't have emotional sobriety. I'll be miserable. The key thing is when I start to feel that way, I say, okay, I'm uncomfortable here. Analyze it, say the prayers, get right with God, see it differently, and work my way out of it. So I have to do 4, 5, 6, and 7 right away. And I have God if I've prayed and meditated and I ask for his direction during the day. And as soon as I get disturbed at all, I ask God to remove it. And it's a lot easier to do this way than to do it the way most people do who are new and just learning the program. Many times they don't see the advantage of immediately doing this naming, analyzing, and letting go. I don't know, we have a lot of discussion meetings in Topeka. I don't go to any anymore because we don't have any meetings right now. I do some on Zoom, but you hear people talking about how they're bothered or what happened, and they don't see the advantage of immediately doing this naming, analyzing, let it go. And why? Because some people like to use this, what they did to me, as a reason to blame them for what's happening in my life. Remember, it's very subtle, but when we get angry at somebody, we're transferring blame to them. We're transferring something to them. And they let these things pile up and pile up until they have to go to someone in the program and get some help to get out from under the mess, or drink. Most people learn pretty fast after a little help. After a while, they get skilled at spotting trouble right away. That's why you need a sponsor or a spiritual advisor, somebody you can go to all the time whenever you're disturbed to help you see it another way. Sandy Beach talked about the 911 text. He would text his sponsor 911. He tells the story how he worked on this project, and he came to work, and he gave it to the boss, and the boss threw it in the trash can. So he got really pissed off. So he texts the sponsor 911. So he talks to his sponsor. He says, I worked on this project, and I gave it to the boss, and he threw it in the trash can. He says, well, maybe the boss's wife was diagnosed with cancer this morning. Maybe the boss didn't sleep well. Maybe he's sick. And he says, maybe the thing you wrote was really crappy. And what they're trying to say is see it differently. See it differently. Let go. Let God. And after a while, you get skilled at spotting trouble right away. For me, it's a complete waste of time to be disturbed. I mean, I'm wasting my life. How much of my life do I want to mess? I was just 70 on Monday. I don't have much time left. I don't want to waste any more time. And after about 10 years sober, you know, I really started to do this well. I said, I don't want to waste any more time getting disturbed or angry or fearful. And I really, really worked hard on 6 and 7 and 10 and 11 every day. And of course, the more I study the book, and the more I read things like this, and the more I make it part of my daily inventory and prayer meditation, the better I do it. He says, after we take on this challenge for a while, it becomes exciting. It does. The more we do step 10, the more we learn about ourselves, the true me, the person God created. And we learn what I don't want to be, because it doesn't work. And it becomes a project, he says. It becomes a lifetime project. It says on page 84, again, that paragraph, we're entered the world of the Spirit. We want to grow in understanding and effectiveness in this world. It should continue for a lifetime. If you stop continuing, you stop growing, you lose your new freedom, you go back into the bondage of the self, you get miserable, and you might as well, you'll drink after a while, or else you'll just have a miserable life. And this is why I call this the emotional sobriety step. I'm just going to read a little bit more and then I'll stop. I want to leave these about 35 minutes. He writes, this is healthy. We've been running from ourselves for so long, and now we can take an interest in ourselves. It's not a negative kind of self-centeredness. Interested in myself in terms of loving my neighbor as myself, and as an agent for God, being able to do God's will, follow God's commandments. Because I'm not in bondage to me anymore. I have the freedom to follow God. And that's what, if you study the New Testament, they talk about, you know, the old self and the new self, and we're a new creation, reborn in the mind. Well, what it says is that you've been liberated from the bondage of self, and you have a power now inside of you to be able to do the things that God commanded and to follow his will. And it says, this is healthy. We've been running from ourselves for so long, we didn't realize it. I lived in the delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life by managing well. And now we can take an interest in ourselves as an agent for God. It's not a negative. Instead, we begin to see what we may contribute to life. Isn't that what it says in the big book? We learned what we could contribute to life. That's in several places. I think it's in the fifth step promises. And what our talents may be, the role God gave us to play, and what our life is all about. We can now have goals and ways to meet these goals because our goals are God-centered. Remember, it says we want to carry a vision of God's will in all of our activities. How I can best serve him. Thy will, not mine, be done. It says if I carry this vision, then I can align, practice my own will as much as I want. That's page 85, because he says it's the proper use of the will. My problem wasn't my will. It was not my will. It was that I was practicing the wrong will, which was my will. I need to practice God's will. My life was unmanageable, not by other people, by me. And so it says we can have a success and a purpose for living. And I'm going to stop there, and then I'm going to record the rest, and I'll put these out as dual podcasts. So we have the Zoom meetings. I've been putting out, I started in April when I stopped recording the meetings, and I started with the big book through the 10th time, and I went through, and we're on a vision for you. So if you're interested in studying the book, you can go back to Saturdays. You go to episodes and you put in Saturday all, and it'll show you that I labeled them all Saturday, and they go back to April. You just keep going back. You'll see starting the big book for the 10th time, and then it follows right through. Doctor's Opinion, Bill's Story, There's a Solution, We Agnostic, How It Works, Preamble, The Steps. We did Working with Others, To Wise, Family Afterwards, and I'm almost done with the vision for you. So I hope everybody stays well. I hope this helps somebody. I really got a lot out of reading this morning. And have a happy Thanksgiving. God bless you. Thank you.